want to share with you something which is partially connected, and I'll tell you how it's partially connected as we move along. But the starting point sounds like it's mamash way out there. So the story behind it is like this. I've been grappling with this question for quite some time, but it came to a head, as it were. I was somewhere for Shabbos, and the person was speaking to his Talmidim, and it really wasn't my place to interject, but I couldn't control myself. So he says, you know, that in his yeshiva, you know, what they do is they really teach the kids the emes, like, you know, that you gotta be like top notch Talmud Chacham. So I said, why is that the emes? It was like, what do you mean, Michael? That's the emes. So at some point in the conversation, I it's him with his talmidim. It's not my place. I got to step back. I sort of stepped back. But I've been grappling with the question in the following way. There's a letter that Odessa writes about discussion with the Gedolim of his generation. The question was, why is it that Germany seemed to be very successful after the reform? At first, was able to create B'nai Torah, Erlich Balabatim. But on the other hand, there was no Gedolim which were coming out of Germany. The other end of the spectrum, Lithuania was creating these superstar Gedolim, but they were losing people left and right. Where they were coming from. And so the answer is that Germany had a program which spoke to what you need to make a person Erech HaBalabas. So in that program, you know, anybody can be successful, you know, almost anybody, right? So you create a program which really targeted the middle crowd, and you did it well. But you didn't have a program which targets the top end. Lithuania, they targeted the top end, and you lost the bottom part. So he says that they asked Reb Chaim Brisker, you know, can we accept that? And Reb Chaim said that Klai Yisrael needs their Gedolim, and that's the lifeblood of Klai Yisrael, and if we have to lose somebody along the way, we'll lose some people along the way. That's what Reb Chaim Brisker answered. Odessa brings this letter in Chelek Gimel, all the letters, which is like a... Now, is that the same answer throughout the generation to generation, you know, or are you talking about the specific situation? I don't know.
And what percentage is worth it?
And where do you draw? You know, well,
it was 90% in Litho. No, it's right, off.
You know, so now, Reb Chaim was Nifter in 1918. The real drop in the Lithuanian Jewry was really between the wars. So I don't know whether Reb Chaim would have given the same answer at that point in time. You know, what he was talking about, what was before. In most places in the shtetl, people, till the upheaval of World War I, people stayed in the shtetl, and they basically stayed through them, because that was everybody did. That was the standard. So you had the kid who got his dream to go off of it, run off to the big cities and join the university, and they all became, you know, fry, or they converted, etc., whatever it was. But basically, what the upheaval of World War I, everybody lost their besura that they had in the shtetl. People were just on their own, and then, you know, they came back. You know, hey, they've been all on their own. They didn't have a real foundation, because they didn't understand Yiddish, most of them. So we don't understand what World War I was like, because we, you know, World War II in our minds eclipsed World War I. Like, over 20 million people were uprooted during World War I. And millions of people died. It was like mind-boggling, the situation, you know, trying to understand it. And then with this Russian Revolution coming at the same time, and there was a reason why there was a revolution. It was a mess. Rashi once had told us that he once said to his Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Tzvi Bloch, that, you know, that they have to get the yeshiva out of Europe because, you know what, you know, the Nazis, etc. He said, we survived, but we could survive anything. You know, we don't understand how bad it was. They couldn't picture anything worse than what was World War I. That's how bad it was. So I don't know if the Rukhaim would give the same answer, but the Rukhaim was addressing this. It had to be sometime before. I imagine the letter was even before 1918, because that's when it was Nifter. So, you know, I don't know, 1910, whatever it was. I don't remember the date, whether there was a date or what the date was.
When he said we need our Gedolim, do you think that meant because they give guidance to the Hamon? In which case, at a certain point, if there's no Hamon, or did he mean some spiritual?
I think he meant both. Now, I mean, the average Rav in Litha was off the charts. Talmud Chacham. These, you know, you had a city of these little shtetlach. These were people are maratzim, and the rav was like, you know, this leila, and you know, each city in that circumstance, he basically they had the respect that Lithuanian Jewry had for the rabbanim, for the Tamid Chachamim, was there was something about a litvak, you know, that they that chachma was something they respected. So he basically ran the city. So. You know, that circumstance that made sense on that level. I said, I don't know what he meant. The question is, you know, how do you translate that into the year 2018? It becomes much more complicated. This is 100 years later, at least. You know, what's the translation? Now, scale it back. You know, in America after the World War II, when they were trying to establish Torah in America. You had the similar type of a shayla, and the answer was given the similar type of answer. But again, but you know, we need to create a generation of Tamei Chachamim. So you're gonna put the bar very high, and some people will fail. And what will happen? We'll have to figure out what's going to happen with them. So I had this conversation with my Rebbe in the 1970s. The 1970s was still, I mean, just to, I mean, I mentioned to you before, but to describe what it was like in 1970s, I remember I went to something called the Kinnus B'nai Torah, which took place twice a year in New York, in the Gudas Israel of 14th Avenue. It said it had a large hall, which could hold about 1,000 people. So there was a Kinnus B'nai Torah, Chol HaMoed Pesach, Chol HaMoed Sukkos. Only the other one would speak. Rabbi Yaakov spoke, Rabbi Gifter spoke, Rabbi Moshe spoke. And you would get together, the B'nai Torah of the tri-state area. We fit into one room. Okay? So I'm talking 1976. Basically, there was about 1,000 people. That was the B'nai Torah of Klal Yisrael. I mean, there's people, you know, some people in Chicago, etc. But, you know, the majority was in the tri-state area. And we fit into a room. And I remember going to that room. And I mean, I learned the tells, and guys from Lakewood, Philly, etc. But I knew most of them by name. I didn't know them well personally, but we knew each other. Like, so yes, this in 1970 we were still we're looking now two generations later. This is 40 plus years later. You've had these people get married, have kids, and these people get married and they're having kids. Right, and when they don't just have one kid, the Jewish, you know, like, you know, like, you know, it's like rabbits, you know, we get a lot of them. So it's two generations later, we're talking about 100,000, you know, that are in our chinuch system, you know, I don't know whether or more, you know, and then the chinuch system was much smaller. So the target was, I asked my rebbe this question. I said, I had a chaver in tells who were not making it through the system, you know, they were definitely, you know, were not able to keep up with the demands of the learning of the yeshiva in a way that they could feel good about themselves. They learned decent, and I'm sure, you know, they were decent, but considering the expectations, they felt like failures. So I asked my rebbe, how do you deal with this? I mean, he said, you know, there's a message you say for the tzibur, and the message you say for the yachid. The message for the Seber, we have to push excellence in learning. That has to be the message. Because if you don't push that message, you're not going to push people to strive. But the Yachid, the message is, whatever you do is fine. And you're valuable no matter what. I said, how do you do that?
Could you argue the opposite?
No, that's true. I said, it doesn't work. I said to him then, this is, you know, I don't get how it works. This is like in the 1979, 1980. I happened to have a penchant for like picking up the guys which I felt were having difficulty, and I cared about them and I was close with them. And like, I remember one of my first times, like, I was in Old Harusa, they gave me this boy from City X, like, you know, who really was having difficulty, like, you know, and I just took to that. I liked that idea of, you know, really helping people and working with them. So I ended up, like, you know, really caring about these guys who were struggling. Not necessarily they were struggling. If we would have lowered the bar, they would have been struggling, and we would have felt fine, but they didn't feel good about themselves. So how do you feel good about yourself in that situation? That's what I was, you know, this is a question which I've been grappling with X amount of years later. Now, the concept of a message for the tzibur and a message for Yoch is definitely true. I'll give you one example, which is like totally off this topic, which is to give an idea of how it works like that. I remember, if you learn Reb Chatzel Levenstein Shmuzin, like he was a person who demanded, got, you know, in Yiddishkeit, a fierce growth process in Yiddishkeit. He wasn't tolerant of my Yankel, Baruch Hashem, you've done one more mitzvah now this year than last year. You're such a tzaddik. You know, that wasn't his mahalo. You know. And then the Shmuzin are. I actually asked the Bacher to learn Rav Kassel Shmuzin from Yom and the Roim. I asked him, told him it's Pasha, it's potentially will give you a depression to the point that it's not mentally unhealthy to learn a Shmuzin. That's how intense they are. Mm-hmm. I had an older Chaver who learned in Panyavich. He says that the Rav Kassel Shmuzin, you walked into a Shmuzin, you came out like this big. You came out like this big. Like that's how you felt, you know. Okay, so I mean, you read the Shmuz and you see that. When they first published Reb Chassel's Mektovim, so I was like fascinated to see what the Mektovim are. As I got the Mektovim, so I read them, it's not the same person. He says you need a little more gaiva. You have to believe in yourself more. And you're such a wonderful person, you know. And gaiva, you know, you have to have gaiva is important. I mean, he just said a Shmuz, if you have gaiva, you're going to burn a Gehenna for like 40 billion years. Here's saying gaiva is important. Like, you know, excuse me. Like, you know, it's like, is it written by the same person? And I, you know, and it hit me like, you know, there's a message for the tzibur, there's a message for the yochid, right? So the message for the tzibur is gaiva is a terrible thing, because gaiva is a terrible thing. This individual person who has low self-esteem, I need to give him gaiva. Now, how do you get that message across? It's also a good question. Like, you know, the kid went to the shmuz and said, "Oh, gaiva is horrible." And then he gets to the council, have more gaiva. Like, you know, he says, "Excuse me," and like Rebbe made him. There's a tall cipher in the letter. Like, you know, how are you convinced that letter is? You know, how does it work? Okay, so you have to figure it out. But, etc. And then and the tenor of the letters multiple times was, you know, how much I'm so proud of you, and like, you know, and you accomplished so much, you know. And the shmooze was never enough, and you always got to do more, and you know, you got to keep growing, and it's, you know, it's like, you know. So I was like, wow. That Bacher actually told him he has to learn Gateway to Happiness during the Moshe Seder. He said, "You can't learn Gateway to Happiness during Moshe Seder. It's like an English book." I said, "I don't care. That's what you have to learn." He said, "I'm not going to do it." He said, "Okay, you're not going to do it. But I'll tell you, that's what you need. That's what you need. If you ask me what you need to learn, that's what you need to learn." Obviously, you know, if he's grappling with all self-esteem, he's not comfortable looking different than reading an English Sefer during Moshe Seder. Like, you know. And it's, you know, I mean, it tells me the Moshe with the niggin, like, you know, the niggin, imagine the niggin, and the rabbi said, it was like, you know, excuse me, you know, so he didn't do it, but, I would like to bring back the day of learning Moshe with the niggin, but that's a different issue. So, I've been grappling with this issue, and I have a thought process, which I think. So this person afterwards, I spoke to him a little bit, he said, you know, any person who's into basketball needs to understand and does understand who are the top players. Now, and he had tremendous respect for that, and he'll want to move towards that goal. If he doesn't understand who the top players are and what it means to be a top player, he'll never move towards that goal. But is he depressed that he never makes it there? Well, there are some people who are, but most people aren't.
Most people know it's just so not nageya them.
So he said, "Well, I need to convey the message to my talmidim that Reb Chaim Kanievsky is where it's at." You know, that's our version of, you know, the top in basketball. Lahavdil, right? And now you're going to not be complacent. You're going to move yourself, but you need to understand that even if you don't get there, as long as you move forward, that's important. So I said, you know, that's a very delicate message. So I was thinking about the following thought. I want to share it with you. Now, I'm taking a complex issue and I'm distilling it down to quote-unquote a simple solution. What I mean is a solution, the concept is simple. The implementation is frustratingly hard. But I think conceptually, it's simple. When I was, you know, preparing my thoughts for the dinner, and I spoke by the dinner, so I said two thoughts really by the dinner. The one was the concept of emunah in yourself. That Hemen Balama Ubroya. Kadosh Baruch Hu believed in his world and he created it. That's what the Medrash says. So Tzadik, and Tzikas Tzadik, takes that concept and he says, what does that mean? It means very simply, if the Rosh created the world, obviously he believed it will accomplish what he wants it to accomplish. That's why he created it. So the Rosh has made a tremendous statement that he believes in the world by the fact that he created it. You know, if he didn't believe in it, he wouldn't create it. Well, taking a step further, the Rosh created me. So there's a saying in AA, God doesn't make junk. If Rosh created me, he created me this way, means this is the way I'm supposed to be, like that. And he believes that that's something good. So I have to believe that too. If I say, no, I'm bad, I'm a mess, I shouldn't be like this, and what I'm really saying, the Rosh messed up when he made me, that's kfira. So emunah kadosh baruch hu is mechayev emunah in yourself. That's what Tzadik says. It's the whole piece is about a paragraph about yay big. An awesome piece. It's not, it goes by Oisius. It's like something like Kuflun Hay, something like that. It's Kuflun Hay, something like that. I don't remember exactly where. That was the first point that I said. The second point that I said is I said over a piece from the first, as I told you before, about Baltashkas. You know that, but there's a piece which I couldn't read. You know, in the section called Chukim, in the Chorev, in the section called Chukim, so the first one about Altashkas, Chukim is the way in Hirsch's understanding of the word, like we spoke about. Chukim means giving something its just due. Like the Chayk means this is the Yosef, the power gave their priests. They had a chayk from Paro. They were given a portion. Lechem chuki, my portion. So everything has its just due. Everything in the world deserves a certain amount of respect, care, etc. He has a piece later on which he deals with suicide. And we touched on this, right? He talks about this idea of, so what's going to convince me not, and he's talking down to suicide, basically. That's what he's doing. He says, what are the answers you tell the person? The guy says, you know, I'm worthless, I have nothing to offer, etc. So as I'm reading this piece, it hit me the following thought. Let's go to an army, right? We indoctrinate the people when they come to the army that every soldier is necessary. We cannot tell the soldier, listen, you know, the reality is like, you know, we really don't need you too much, you know, and we're going to put you up to as fodder for the cannon, you know, because you're dispensable. He's not going to fight. We talk about, you know, without you, who knows what's going to happen. You are integral to the success of the army. That's what we tell him. So the guy says, really? So why am I not a general? He doesn't say that. We train him to understand that there are different roles, and every role is just as important as the other role. But that still means a general is a general. And yes, if you have certain talents, you're going to move to become a general, and some people are going to stay in the infantry, you know, as foot soldiers the rest of their life. You're going to be Private X. You move up to Private First Class. I'm like, wow, I made it. Private First Class, you know. I went from level, like the bottom level, three levels up, you know. Third class, second class, first class. Then start the sergeants, you know. I didn't even make it to sergeant. So why are they walking on the press the whole time? So what do we do in the army? We were able to create a message that the army is one unit. The army is bets in one body. And a body has different parts. So we say to the person, listen, you know, a body, like, you know, we understand that the head, the brain, and the heart are more important than the hands. It's like, are you happy without your hands? It's, no, the hand. Well, it's not as important as a head. Yeah, but it's so important that I don't measure it like that. I don't measure, you know, my hands. Hands are pretty, like, you know, depressed because they're not a head. Hands are hands. Your head is a head. Yeah, but you know, what's the difference between the guy who's, you know, he has 57 billion and he has 570 billion? You know, maybe the guy's there, like the numbers are so extraordinary that, like, it's not important, the difference. We understand the Klai Yisrael is one body. We're one army. And I need every soldier. The fact that I'm not the general doesn't make me worth less. The problem which we're grappling with is because I define my self-esteem, which is what people grapple with, by the fact that I'm not the general. I'm just a soldier. We don't let that happen in the army, because that would be demoralizing. We would lose the whole army. So we found a way to give across a message. Yes, we want the people who become the generals to become generals. We want them to strive. And we tell them, like, oh, I was a general, you know. But at the same time, we're able to get across a message that you're so valuable. How do we do that? We look at the army as one unit. And an army cannot function without soldiers, without infantrymen. It just won't work. Like, well, everybody become a... If it's so good to be a general, let's make them all generals. We don't have an army anymore. So the analogy which I used by the dinner was an engine. So engines need spark plugs. Like, that's pretty important, because, like, without spark plugs, you ain't going anywhere. You also need bolts to hold the engine block together, otherwise you're not going anywhere either. Now, the cost of a bolt is less than the cost of a spark plug. The misfiring of a bolt is worse than significant than misfiring a spark plug. But without bolts, you're not going anywhere. So the bolts say, I feel so depressed, I'm only a bolt, I'm not a spark plug. He understands that without him, there's nothing. So Chazal say, Zayin Yochel, Zayin Yochel, Shneim Chayovim. If two people do a malacha together and neither one can do it on their own, each one is credited with the full result. And they're Chayiv Skila from the Mechal Shabbos. Even though the halacha is, if two people do Chil Shabbos together, they're Potter. It's not two people, it's all me. Because without me, it wouldn't happen. I am only a bolt, it's irrelevant. You know, if you have a situation where it's 50-50, both are chayiv. If it's 70-30, also both are chayiv. Because without the 30, it's not going to happen. I don't need to be at an equal level to make it happen. So, what's the problem? We measure our self-esteem by individuals, not by the tzibur. So there's a fascinating piece from the Shira Das. The Shira Das says that people came to him with the question, says, what should you focus on? Should you focus on giving to Klal Yisrael? Or focus on your personal growth? That was the question he asked. He says, the root of the question is, because, right, you see those two things in conflict. That's only because you see your Ani as you, and Klal Yisrael is something out there. If you expand your Ani to include Klal Yisrael, there's no stira. Huh. That's the words that he said. That sounds like so easy, right? It's a simple, well, how do you expand your Ani to include Klal Yisrael? Like, he gave like a simple answer, like, you know, it's not a steer anymore, because if I understand that my next door neighbor is me, so of course I take care of myself. What do those words mean? How do you create that reality? So the point I'm saying is, we keep measuring ourselves. Listen, I'm me and you're you. And if I'm me and you're you, and I'm less than you because you got a higher position, I feel less valuable. I don't have good self-esteem. I don't have good self-esteem. I'm busy worrying about my emotions. I can't be busy growing, because I'm busy dealing with my negative emotions. If I could create a message to everybody that you are so valuable to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to Klal Yisrael, that without you, we can't exist, and you are confident that in that message, you're comfortable seeing how far you can go. I'm not scared of the try, because what happens if I don't go so I don't go any further. I'm not scared of the try. But if my value is based on my failures and successes, I'm scared to try sometimes, because if I fail, I'm a failure. And I feel like a failure. So I think, like, the answer is you need to create a way to give a message that everybody, there's no competition over here. We're all bets in one unit. And when bets in one unit, we're all totally necessary in that unit. And if we get that sort of like absorbed into our minds when we're young, and we're confident about that, so I'm totally comfortable with that. I'm such an important person. So now, once that's true, I don't feel like less. I don't have to measure myself against anybody else, because it's irrelevant. So conceptually, it makes a lot of sense. How do you convey that to a kid is like mind-boggling, because all of our systems are not all of it, but a large amount of our systems is based on competition. It's based on each individual person. And we talk about, you know, each person, you have to realize your carcass and worry about your growth, and, you know, and that's true, right? Revolver writes that you can't work with Bachram about Gaiva, because they need Gaiva. They need to believe that there's going to be something extraordinary. So what do you do when they find out that's not true? Like, you know, at the end of the day, you know, yes, the Vilna Goyen. Vilna is a Vitaina Goyen. As long as you want, you'll be a Goyen. Like, that's what you tell the kids, right? You know. Give them the Makarthas. there's Shevet Levi and there's Shevet Zvulun, you know, there's Shevet Naphtalis. Does that mean that that somebody in Shevet can't become a Shevet Levi? He could. Can everybody in Naphtali become a Shevet Levi? No. So it means who's more important? So that if we can find a way to get that message across, that's a relevant question. But our greatest motivation, which we use with ourselves, usually is through the Gaiva part. I'm going to become something special, therefore I'm motivated. Because I'm just going to... Russia came along and said, everybody's wonderful, everybody's equal. The result was nobody was going to do anything. There was no motivation. So how do you motivate in Klai Yisrael? Because the answer is Klai Yisrael is important to me. And if I understand that I have something to contribute, which is of value to Klai Yisrael, I want to give it. Can you make a kid who's selfish, selfless? This is a very hard question. How do you do that? How do you convey that it's not about you, it's about all of us? So you have a few of these like little tzaddikim which are like born like that, you know? Right? And everybody else, it's, you know, higher pay, honor, me, both. They don't start out like that. You know, the kids, first, you know, like, I can't sleep all night because I'm going to wake up mommy. It's really not nice, you know. I'll deal with the fact that I'm starving and I'll go back to sleep, you know. You know, I'll suck my thumb, you know, in the middle of the night until the morning because it's not nice to wake up mommy. No kid says that, you know. They start out very selfish. But they all have, there's tremendous, at the same time, kids have tremendous potential being selfless. You know, our kinderlach have moments where they like rise to the occasion. You're like, wow, just how do we clone that? That should happen again and again and again. So that's the message that I'm thinking about. I was looking at a piece in this week's parsha where we discuss Moshe Rabbeinu. So all of the Bali Moses say, you know, we're given the biography of Moshe Rabbeinu. Like, you know, you write the biography, like you write the stories about how, you know, he was young, what made him special and unique, and that's the message, which, you know, so the sons of the Lagarn, they say, you know, when he was like X amount of, you know, young, he put on a yarmulke and said a bracha before he drank his milk, you know, and he was a child, you know, clear the shiloh, didn't have erva for his age, you know, like, he went through Masechtas X, you know, he made a Kabbalah, he's going to learn Masechtas Menachos, so he was like, you know, 9 years old, he sits down on Simchas Torah night, and he finishes Masechtas Menachos. Zvachim Menachos in one night, you know. That's the story of the guy. Right? Whether true or not is irrelevant. Like Rivera Wine says, the stories are irrelevant, but they say a message about what Klai Yisrael is Machshir. Like, what stories do we say about Gedolim tells us whether they're true or not is irrelevant. It tells us what we think is kosher. So if you get up, you know, if we be a nation, we talk about stories about how wonderful people are at hitting balls with sticks. It tells you something about the people. And he's such a phenomenal baseball player, right? If that's the stories that we tell, that we talk about the stories about how conniving and, you know, and the way we're able to, it also tells you stories about people. We talk about stories about how these people were so wonderful they cared for somebody else, or how smart they were, and that tells you about what we're machshav. So one of the stories of Moshe Rabbeinu that we're told that the Yarmulke was some, he goes out and he cares. And he comes to the two nitzim. Right? What are you doing? Don't hit somebody. He comes to Midian, Vayoshion, and he saves, he protects him. Right? The three stories were given, and then we have the stories. The Medrash adds in the stories of, you know, how he was the shepherd, and he cared for the sheep, etc. So, what's the Nakuda? Like, what is the Nakuda that we're defining over here? So Volba says the Nakuda we're defining over here is the Mida of Noisibolim Chaberet. That's the Mida we're defining. He says that it's not Chesed. Noisibolim Chaberet is Chesed. But the Mida is the idea that I can get into somebody else's situation and understand and feel about their situation. That is selflessness. And that is caring. Rebbe writes in his, when he started his Chelik Beis, he started his Vadim and Chesed. You know, he would work with them working in Chesed. So his first assignment for the Chabura was, for the next 2 weeks, don't do any, I'm not asking to do any Chesed. I want you to go out there and three times a day you meet random people, think about what their needs are. Because you can't do Chesed until you know what the people's needs are. So what are people's needs? I had a Chavar in Yeshiva who was, he was a really sweet person. He really cared about other people, etc. He just didn't get people. So one of my other Chavarim, who was, we were both like working with him and trying to help him and develop him, etc. He says, you know, so and so will run to the end of the world to do a chesed for another person, but for the life of man, after that, the man, he can't figure out what people need. So once you explain to him what they need, he'll do it, and he'll like do it, you know, b'maseiros nefesh gemura. But he doesn't get people. So Rav Elba says, okay, my first step is I want you to get people. So for the next 2 weeks, three times a day, you're going to meet random people, whatever, it be the, you know, the postman, you know, you walk into to the clerk behind the desk, you know, in the office, in the store, etc. What are their needs? So they come back after 2 weeks and they give a report. He says, basically people reported that basically they found that most people's needs are very similar to theirs. So he says, you obviously have no understanding of other people. People are not clones of you. All you're doing is seeing yourself, and you're like the big tzaddik. You want to, see, you know, you want to do chesed. So you see, you clone yourself with everybody else. I had a chaver who was nifter young in yeshiva, Moti Schneider, Allah Shalom. So I remember by the Levaya. So Echad Bnei Chabura, one of the sort of Chaim Nisbam, one of Mechaverim, he was maspid. Besides Rashivas, he was maspid. So he asked the steer, the Ezel Chacham. So the mission of it says Ezel Chacham Lo Mikol Adam. The Gemara in Masechtas Tomit says Ezel Chacham Reisa Nolad. So which one is it? So he said the truth is that a Chacham is Reisa Nolad. But how do you know what the Narlet is? I mean, I'm sitting here and seeing the sister and realizing that this is going to play out eventually to X, Y, and Z. How do I know that? So I have life experience. I'm 80 years old. I've been through a lot of life. I know that the A leads to B, leads to C, etc. But I'm 25 years old. How do I know that? If you're 11 Mikol Adam, you know that. The person is able to realize everybody has pieces of information and understanding that I don't have. You're able to see beyond yourself, then you start seeing how the world works. So the meat of the revolver says, my goal is to get you to see how somebody else thinks, and how somebody else, what his emotions are, what his feelings are. There's this wonderful English book, if there's anything I can do to help. .. So there's a whole section over there about stupid comments that people say to people who are in difficult circumstances. You know, and there's some winners. And these people are so well-meaning. They come to Menachem Noble and they say, like, you know, they try to Menachem Noble with the line, which is like, you lost the person sitting beside, but at least you have your other kids. Like, really? Like, that was really, really helpful, you know. The pain of a parent losing a child is not to bear. The fact they have other children doesn't make it feel better. So basically, you just minimized my pain. That's what you just did. You know, and these type of lines, etc. You know, like, you know. Gloria Feldman has like a. She was sitting Shiva, and for Amram, so Amram was nifted like suddenly. He wasn't ill at all. He was playing a game of football on the Erev Shabbos, and he had a heart attack and he died. Try to picture what that means. Shayna was like was less than a year old, I think, when it happened. Like she was a year old. You know, there's a woman with like four little kids. All of a sudden, she's informed that her husband had a heart attack and dropped dead. Like the shock, you know, young woman. You know, like so she's sitting shiva. So somebody comes in and says, you know, why does it happen that people have good marriages? But of course, the person is saying, "I don't have a good marriage. I wouldn't mind my husband. I wouldn't mind my husband dropping dead. I wouldn't mind my husband dropping dead. But you, I feel bad for you. Like, thank you. Like, she just looked at her like, did you just really say that? Like, so where does it come from? It comes from people which are well-meaning. They want to say something. They want to make the person feel good. They have no idea how to relate to the person's pain. So they say stupid things. You know, somebody's sick. You know, somebody has a financial situation. Ramoti Finkelman said over a story that during the real estate crash in the 90s, like he went over to somebody, you know, to give him like a chizuk and wouldn't be talking a century, you know. So the fellow looked at him. He said, in 1929, when the stock market crashed, people committed suicide were the wealthy people who lost all their money, not the average person. And he walked away. You don't know what it feels like to go from being a multimillionaire to being impoverished. So what do you give me chizuk about amun and talking? You don't understand what I'm going through. Please leave me alone. Right. So I have no right to talk to him unless I really understand the pain he's going through. There are gedolim which talk are able to do that. I told you my mice I had with the square rabbit. You know that the Rishiva told me that the Gifter told me that square rabbit became rabbi his father was Nifter. He was a young man. So Rishiva told me that he holds the scare rabbi. The scare rabbi is a person who went prematurely gray for the Tzaras of Klai. So he carries the burden of the Tzaras of Klai. And my wife and I went to the rabbi a few times, you know, for things. And I saw that. Like, he gets your situation. Even though he never lived through it, he gets you. He gets into your head. And he can think ahead what he could do to help you alleviate your situation. So, I mean, I came up with the story, it's a little bit of personal nature, but I was blown away with this ability. I'm sitting in the hospital, I got a phone call from somebody in Cleveland Heights that the Gabbai from the square called him, that the Rebbe told him to get in touch with me. Said, call him my Pesach, the Rebbe has nothing else to do but to contact the Litvak in, you know, Cleveland, because he needs chizuk. He's sitting in a hospital dealing with an issue. You know, I sent the message for Yom Tov, you know, the situation, you know, when I take him to work, we were in the hospital, you know. But, like, wow, he got it. And how do I know he got it? I was there 17 years later, and I remembered why I came. Mind-boggling reality. He remembered why I came. I mean, it's a chikol chutz to ask him. I was like Litvak that I would do it. You know, only the chutz would do that. He says, the Rebbe remember why I came. And he said, he told me why I came 17 years earlier. He remembered me. He remembered my name. He remembered the name for the tefillahs. You know, how many people went through that office in 17 years? Like a million people? I understand what Rav Shiva meant when he said about the Rebbe. It's that the kudah to be able to get into somebody else's, to be able to be, the focus is not about me. I'm so focused on you. Now, when I do that, the message is a message of I care about you tremendously. Because, you know, there's the people that, you know, there's people that you find when they do a chesed, you feel like so comfortable taking it from them. And there's people you do a chesed, you don't want to take it from them because you know you're going to be beholden them the rest of your life. Because one person, it's about you, and one person is about them. They say that the Beis Halev in the sixth parsha says an awesome line, and I'll tell you what I think it really means and how it's misused. The Beis Halev says that, you know, when you do Bikur Chayalim, the Chayla is like an esrog. He's the vehicle of the mitzvah. The same way you beautify an esrog, you beautify the challah. You take care of the challah as best as possible. It's a beautiful message. Right? There's a ma'aser with a certain Adam Gadol was ill, and he told some people he doesn't want visiting them. He says, I want to be a governor, not a chefsa. He's a chefsa of the mitzvah. So you're not letting me as a human being with my pain and my tzaras attached. You're letting me as, you got a hechatim of getting schar and shemayim. Now you're an esrog. So you would treat me with the same level of a human reality as you treat an esrog. I'm not a human being. I'm a chefsa. I want to be a governor, not a chefsa. Right. But there's certain people that push you feel like so comfortable that they make you feel so, because their message is so much that I care about you, and there's nothing better I want to do than be involved in helping you. It's not about me. They've internalized this message. It's not about that. There's a bigger reality in their lives. and I'm part of that reality, so I don't feel a stira between me and them. And there's people which it's them, they're nice people, so they do chesed. But it's like, you know, it's like at the end of the day, it's about them. And we've seen over the years, you have different guests that come to your house. Certain guests, but it's a machai to have these guests. Certain people, which like, they're nice people, but like, they're into themselves. You know. So the message of Moshe Rabbeinu was that for Moshe Rabbeinu to be the person who's going to be the take Klai Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, Moshe Rabbeinu to be the leader of Klai Yisrael, he had to be a person that's not about him. That he gets them. I don't know what it means to grow up in the palace and to relate to the pain of a person who has burdens. You can see it from here to tomorrow. You know what it means. Moshe Rabbeinu did. That meant, the message over here wasn't, he cared. That's a nice message. That's not the message. The message of that he understood the pain, even though he never lived through it himself. And that's what it means to be a member of Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu was chosen the leader not because he's extraordinary, it's because he's a paradigm that we're all supposed to strive for. If you want to know, what are you striving for? It didn't say that he was brilliant, it didn't say that he learned the day and night. It said that he was able to understand everybody else. If that would be the message that we get across, that that's what we're all striving for, we could also, now that you feel comfortable with that, you know, well, we need to be, Torah is what gives that to us. Torah is what gives that, like we spoke about like 2 weeks ago, that message of the extraordinary experience of experiencing a word of Torah is life transforming for you and for the rest of Klal Yisrael. How can you not want to do it? So do as much as you can. I once asked Rashi Rav Chaim, Rav Dessler writes, and they published the Talmud for Rav Dessler, and he writes over there that he was grappling with the following question. You say in Shabbos Davening, I think I told you this once, Mesabenu Mituvecho. He says, what does that mean? You're talking about Gashmi as a Ruchni. You're talking about Gashmi is that's the Tilma Gashmi. It doesn't fit the rest of the. You're talking about Harinin Basarasecha. You're talking about Tarin Lubavchabayamis, and we should have a lot of Gashmias. No, doesn't fit. So you're talking about Ruchnias. How can you see it from Ruchnias? You always want more. That's what Rav Dessler writes. He didn't know how to answer the question. He says, Talmidim asked me a question. I don't know how to answer this question. So this is what he writes in the letter. So I happened to see this at Sukkot time. So I was back in Cleveland for a visit. So I went to Shiva Chol HaMoed, Shiva Chaim, to visit him. So I threw out the question, curious to see what he would say. He answered me like on the spot, like immediately. He says, when you give a person a piece of chocolate cake, he has tremendous pleasure from the chocolate cake. He momentarily feels sebeya, he has a geshmak from it. The result is not that I feel full, I don't want any more. He says, let's do it again. That's what I mean. Avada Tomer Ruchnius. But we need to give a message that Ruchnius is not, hey, keep striving work, because you got to get to the end. It's each piece is so geshmak, of course you want another one. So if I tell the kid, you know, the goal is be like Reb Chaim Kanievsky, so like, man, that's such an overwhelming goal. I'll never get there. Why should I try? If the goal is get this piece of Torah because it's really geshmak, and you get it and he feels geshmak, so okay, you're a man. No, I'm not. I'll have another piece of cake. That's the message you want to give across, that we're comfortable trying because it's all so geshmak. Why would you want to try? But I'm only comfortable trying, but I don't feel like a failure, because each piece in itself is a tremendous accomplishment. I think the combination of those two points together, of that clarity of understanding of that our paradigm, that if my story is about Reb Chaim Kanievsky, is Reb Chaim Kanievsky is a person who sees himself as a member of Klal Yisrael like everybody else, and he cares about everybody else, and he feels comfortable being just one of Klal Yisrael. And his role is to learn a lot of Torah, and that's a very important role, So you know what? I'm also a member of Klal Yisrael. I also get a member of Klal Yisrael, and I also want to see if I can be that person who can play that role for Klal Yisrael. Great. And if not, also great. Not that I don't want to try. It's not like, you know, well, hey, you know, if you can be a private, why should you want to be a general? No. I would like to be a general. I want to try for that. But I don't feel disappointed that I end up being a private, because both of those are important. That balance that we're striving for. That's what I'm suggesting. I don't know how you implement the mice, I don't know.